better person than I knew I was.
Hey, folks, let's spend some time with friends up north. Pat Kreitlow of Up North News is on Lake Wissota. Sarah Yacoub with the Minocqua Brewing Company Super Pack is on the Mississippi River. And up on Lake Minocqua is Kirk Bangstad of the Minocqua Brewing Company. Wherever you are, welcome. You're up north.
Won't you let me die happy? Hello and welcome to the Up North Podcast. I'm Kirk Bangstad from the Minocqua Brewing Company.
I'm Sarah Yacoub.
And on the show this week, I'm Pat Kreitlow, the rural economy, the rural voter, and why everyone in the state should pay attention to their issues. Rural voters were once Democratic stalwarts. Then Republicans figured out they couldn't win on economic or policy issues, so they went all in on culture wars, and it's been working. Even as they've been voting to impoverish rural America, ruin the schools, turn the roads back to dirt, and so on. So we're going to talk to Darren Von Rudin of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Kelly Westland, the longtime Northern representative for Senator Tammy Baldwin, until last week when she announced her candidacy for state Senate in the 25th district, the seat Janet Bewley is retiring from and held prior to that by Bob Junk.
So, Pat, I'm glad we're doing this show tonight because, you know, all of us have been in rural parts of Wisconsin. The whole podcast is about up north podcasts. We're outside of Madison and Milwaukee, and it just galls me that, you know, it seems like the Democrats aren't, you know, making a lot of headway up in our neck of the woods. And tell me what you think, but I think it's because the Republicans have really focused on rural areas of Wisconsin, and the Democrats seem to never have enough money to be able to, like, focus other places that aren't the suburbs of the big cities. What do you think?
Well, I think we've all experienced that, and I'm going to pivot to Sarah right away because her experiences might be the same as mine in a couple of different ways. One, there are too many people that think, you know, the rural areas of Wisconsin and America are lost forever. We have had, we have seen Democratic Party leadership at the state and at the national level who always just want to look for one more vote inside city limits rather than talk to 10 people outside of them. And I mean literally outside of them, just on the other side of the border. They won't knock doors over there. And so, Sarah, I wonder if you don't see that same kind of division on the western edge of the state.
You know, the narrative wars are very interesting. So we had a candidate who was a former firefighter who knocked literally every single door, put in the effort, and still lost. And that, and you know, we had Patty Shackner, who was incredible and still lost. And she was a moderate who did a lot of really good work for the community. And what I can tell is the Republicans have gotten very good at exploiting the good nature of their base. So people around here, you know, are living their lives. They're not immersed in politics. They don't get a steady supply of balanced news. And if you're only hearing your stuff from Fox News, you're getting a real twisted sense of what life is like. And you don't want to believe that the politician who you want to like or who you voted for is lying to you. And so it seems like this formula that just keeps on giving for them as they accuse Democrats of what they themselves are doing.
How do I put this? There's a degree of, because Democrats in urban areas have embraced diversity, you know, tolerance, openness, that has been portrayed by too many as some kind of a zero-sum game. Like, you know, suddenly respecting the rights of one group means my rights are going to be taken away. And we talked about that last week with Marathon County. And simply being able to acknowledge that diversity and openness is a good thing. And instead, Kirk, I remember one of Hubert Humphrey's great sayings is compromise is not a dirty word. And boy, has that been proven wrong over these, past decades.
Yeah, I mean, hatred of things that are not exactly as, you know, what happened when you grew up 20 years ago. None of us grew up with anybody other than white people in northern Wisconsin. It's just kind of what it was. So that weirdness is somehow bad and it's been exploited.
Because sometimes the worst of another group is used with a broad brush to portray them all. When we come back, Kelly Westland's going to tell us more about that on representing a progressive like Tammy Baldwin up north for the last 8 years and is now running for state Senate. You're up north.
Sisters a nurse at the old folks' home. Mom's still cooking too much for supper and me.
will tell you, having married into a dairy farm family, I grabbed the chicks for this one for its themes about rural life and how it isn't what it used to be. And sometimes a strong woman has just got to do her own thing. And that's going to be part of this segment.
Well said, Pat. Welcome back, everyone, to the Up North podcast. And welcome to a segment we will call Strange Coincidences. Once upon a time, our own Pat Kreitlow was a state senator here in Wisconsin, then a candidate for Congress. In fact, the Republicans were so afraid of him that they gerrymandered the 7th Congressional District to project Sean Duffy, quite possibly one of the biggest hacks in politics, from Pat back in the day. After that, Pat became the first Northern representative for newly elected Senator Tammy Baldwin. And when he left that post, it was taken over by none other than Kelly Westland, who also ran for Congress in the 7th District and is now running for state Senate in the 25th Senate District.
So you can see the problem with this comparison is self-evident. Everything that I've done, Kelly is doing as a way cooler person. It's the Ginger Rogers thing. She's doing it backwards and in heels, more badass, and hopefully turns that into representing Northern Wisconsin in the legislature for the 25th. It is so good to see you, my friend. It's been way too long. How are you?
Agreed. I'm good. And thank you for all of that, Pat. I'm really excited to be on the campaign trail again and following in your footsteps, even if it's not quite in the same order. But yeah, so far, so good. It's only been a little over a week and a half since I made the announcement, but it feels really good to be back on the trail. That's for sure. Thanks for having
me. All right, so Kelly, we're going to talk about your campaign in a second, but I wanted to actually talk about the last, how long has it been since you've been Tammy's representative?
7 years. 7 years.
7 years. So the last 7 years, obviously you're in the Ashland area generally. I'm more up north, more Minocqua, Sarah's in Hudson. So, you're a little bit more blue where you are than we are, but you're representing all of Northern Wisconsin on Tammy's behalf. And so I know it can't be easy because for a lot of people in the North Woods and rural areas, they somehow think before they've even met Tammy that somehow she's a negative force in their lives, some big city Madison politician. And so from hearing Pat talk about it, though, it's like it's also a cool job because once you actually start talking to these people and you tell them how Tammy is on their side versus how Ron Johnson is not on their side, that you can kind of like change a lot of minds. So I kind of wanted to talk about your last 7 years and, if that's kind of at all true of what I just kind of said.
Sorry, you're breaking up a little bit, but that's Wi-Fi in the Northwoods.
I was going to say that's Wi-Fi in the Northwoods, but
I lost you guys.
Yep. Well, we still got you,
are you there,
Kelly.
So yeah, we're back.
We're just going to keep yapping and lead into you talking about what my experience as well. How cool it is representing Tammy up north.
I am so grateful to have had that opportunity. You really get to understand the just diverse kinds of people across this huge area. So while I live up in Ashland, my office was down in Eau Claire. So I was, commuting back and forth and oftentimes working, out of my car with a Wi-Fi hotspot and a laptop and, going to where the people are. And you're right that there are a lot of folks who have this idea that Tammy is, this lefty Madison liberal, whatever. But when they meet her, the first thing that people comment on is that she is like a genuinely nice person. She's delightful to be around. And then the issues that she looks for, especially, when she was a member of the minority in the Senate, you can't get a lot done unless you're working, on issues that have bipartisan support. So she was proactive about reaching out to folks in agriculture, folks in the timber industry, working with the ports, making sure that she was doing things that could support working families and rural communities. And it was really gratifying to kind of see that change from constituents in this corner of the world. I just want to check in and make sure you guys can still hear me with the connection here.
Nope, you're good. We're doing fine. Although you're giving us a great campaign ad for more bipartisanship to get infrastructure spending done.
Yes.
But Sarah, you've got our next question here.
Yeah. So Kelly, we know the job of representing Senator Baldwin up north is definitely driven by public service more than partisan politics, contrary to what we hear in media and social media. But, you know, after all, you're on the official side and not necessarily the campaign side. So if you would sort of give our listeners a sense of what it looks like when the rubber actually hits the road. You know, I imagine you've had more than a few moments where the progressives who live up north, and let's be honest, there are still quite a few progressives around here, and they have to be so happy to talk to you about how Tammy is able to provide public service to everyone while also being true and unabashed about her values.
Yeah, I mean, there are, you know, there are all stripes. I'll put it that way. There are some folks who want her to be the champion of, you know, all things left that they care about. And there are other folks that also understand that, you know, context matters. And she's not just representing the people that voted for her. She's going to represent all of the constituents in the state of Wisconsin. But, you know, the hardest part about that at times was that people would see me on, you know, government business and want to talk to me about campaign stuff. And I'll tell you, she's also a person who has ethics. So I would have to kind of stop and say, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you about that at this, you know, event while I'm wearing my Senate, you know, hat or in my Senate office or whatever. But generally, once you explain it to folks, they're pretty supportive. Although, you know, you definitely get calls related to things that they've seen on the campaign trail that you have to kind of be like, listen, this is not not my wheelhouse. Sorry, I can't answer your questions about the next fundraiser or whatever. So
let me jump in on that. Like, there has been a number of occasions where I've called your campaign office and I was like, Kelly Westland's got to talk about this on the show because, like, it's PFAS or it's like the Shwamagon, it's like the mining. And I'm like, why can't Kelly talk about this? And they're like, because we play by the rules and we actually keep this campaign separate from the business of helping people in Wisconsin. So it's true.
Yeah.
You haven't been available to us until you've been a candidate, unfortunately for me.
Sorry, Kurt. Today was actually the first time, like, since before I went to work for Tammy, that I was able to contribute to her campaign. And it wasn't very much, but it was exciting to be able to do it, you know, because we play by the rules. And I'll tell you, when I see my counterparts on the other side of the aisle, oftentimes they are people who work for the federal government, who also hold positions within the state GOP, who also might have local elected office, whereas all of those things were considered conflicts for us. So, I mean, times it felt limiting, you know.
The term double dipping doesn't get used nearly enough to describe what we see going on there. Kelly, let's switch over to the decision to run for state Senate. Janet Buley put in many admirable years in the district. You're stepping up for that. Tell us about the factors that led you to say that this would be the time with Janet stepping back for you to step up.
Sure. Well, you know, it's something that I've wanted to do is to run for public office again. I mean, as hard as 2014 was, I think it was a really worthwhile endeavor. I met a lot of incredible people and had the chance to experience a lot of really cool things. But there are also times when working in that government role, I would see a lot of the very real needs, very real concerns that people had throughout Northwestern Wisconsin. And oftentimes it was stuff that we'd have to refer to our state counterparts for resolution. And especially, you know, in certain assembly districts, you know, Janet's been a fantastic representative in the Senate, but we didn't have, we have at least one third of that Senate district that was represented by Republicans I can't understand how they can justify the choices they make and say that they're representing rural communities. Especially when you consider things like the declining shared revenues and the levy limits and the lack of investment in, you know, the very basic things like ambulance service that is mandated by state statute, but is not funded for rural communities. And you want someone to show up when you dial 911.
It does. It comes right to me. Let's talk about the district for a second, because there's been so much talk about the gerrymandering that was done, the new maps that were put in place that we really haven't looked at it district by district. I know that somebody else came up with this, not me, but they said, you know, it's going to be interesting to see the maps of the future continue. The northern districts will continue to get bigger and slide down, because they have to account for the population growth in the Madison area and in the Milwaukee suburbs. So the districts themselves, and the 25th is no different. It's kind of done this, you know, slide over the years. Were there substantial changes with this new map compared to the current lines?
So it wasn't super substantial. I mean, it was more substantial in 2011, as you know, you well know. But it's been horseshoe shaped since then. Mm-hmm. So the day that I announced in the morning, it was all a part of 13 counties. It was, you know, several of them had like a township here and there. And by the evening of my announcement day, it was down to 9 counties in all our part. So at least now I've got all of Burnett, but it cut out everything in Polk County, St. Craig County, Dunn County. It completely removed the Lac-de-Flambeau reservation from the district. So I guess it kind of consolidated it, although I'm still confident that this is a winnable district for Democrats, that's for sure.
For folks that are listening elsewhere around the state, yes, it's something you know, people might not know if they don't look at the maps carefully. They know that there's this big blue area, you know, around Milwaukee, a big blue area around Madison, but they don't understand that there is quite the sliver from Superior into Ashland Bayfield that has carried that region for quite a while. Yeah. But I know, Kelly, people are asking, is that going to be enough now? In the Senate district, in the district that the assembly district that Nick Milroy is retiring from and such. And you sounds like you still have an optimistic view of that.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, we've been on doors already. We've been out canvassing to collect nomination signatures. And first, the people that are in the deepest, like reddest parts of this district, when I knock on their doors, they're just glad that somebody is talking to them 6 months out, even in what is perceived to be unfriendly territory. And I think so far that's getting me a lot of credit. And tomorrow I'll be doing the same canvassing down in Barron County and knocking on doors where people haven't shown up in, I don't know, 10 years longer, who knows, rural communities where they're still listed as, you know, undecided or something else where we don't have any information. And the biggest thing hearing from folks here, you know, they're over some of the extreme partisanship. They don't feel like their voices are being heard. And so when somebody shows up and asks them what they think, and is willing to listen, that does count for a lot. And then of course, it's gonna come down to turnout. As you know, Governor Evers is up for election. We've got a statewide Senate race. There are some things on the ticket that are a big deal. And then of course, you know, if we lose one seat in the Senate, then Republicans will have a supermajority in that House. And that's also going to be a problem. So there are a lot of reasons for Democrats to show up.
Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for our listeners and for us here on the show to help inspire people to get out and vote? I mean, Republicans seem to have this outrage machine dialed mm-hmm. in, and there's always that red button topic, and it sometimes is often made up issues, it seems. How do we get people to believe that their vote matters and to get out and vote?
Sure. I mean, like, I feel like if I had the perfect answer to that, then, you know, that would solve a lot of problems. But all we can do is explain to them that, you know, this is their government and this is the say that they have. And we're never going to change, you know, these horrendous gerrymandered maps. We're never going to make a difference that benefits their every day unless they take the time to show up and get their neighbors to show up and, you know, just help them find the ways to make it workable to be a voter. I know that it's not convenient and that the folks in the Republican majority are always putting more and more, you know, hurdles in the way. But we've just got to keep showing up. That's all there is to it. And the thing is, we can't just take that for granted because there are plenty of other people who are being disenfranchised that would normally be supportive of Democrats and good policy that helps communities like ours. So if we don't show up, then, you know, it's more than just us that are going to suffer.
We have only been talking about the Kelly Westland from 2012 onward. Pardon our manners. Tell folks a little bit more about, you know, what your story before you got to that point. What were you doing? What got you involved in, you know, public service in the first place? You know,
sure.
Where are you from? What's your sign? What, you know, whatever you want to tell folks.
Well, I'm a Gemini. So I'm a military brat, grew up in a few different places. My dad was Air Force. My mom worked for the DOD, loading missiles onto submarines, that kind of thing. And that's where she met my stepdad in Charleston. He's in the Navy. So we moved around a bit. I've lived in a lot of places, mostly South Carolina, Texas, Utah, and ended up in Ashland actually to go to Northland College. I had a really great environmental studies teacher in high school who was from Wisconsin, and he pointed me in the direction of Northland, which is a private school that specializes in environmental sorts of aspect of all things they teach. And after I got my degree there, I stayed here and got a really great job working for a nonprofit that was doing we kind of always thought of it as like local food, energy, economy. you know, keeping, you know, supporting local businesses, implementing renewable energy, helping grow our local food system. And I did some more of that work as well after the fact when I opened my own small consulting business, married a local boy. And that's part of what kept me here. He's a carpenter, year-round outdoors person. And at the time I was helping my sister take care of her young children. And so she came up here, and eventually my mom wanted to be closer to grandkids. So she came, and my brother was like, well, everybody else is there. So he came. So now the whole family is here. And it's been 20 years. And I don't think that I could leave yet, even if I wanted to. My mom would be furious. So, but it's an easy place to fall in love with. You know, you see that big lake 6 blocks from here, and it just sucks you right in. And it's made winter something where I've had to find ways to appreciate them more. But after 20 years, I'm there.
You do. You've done that. And like I said, you've had these tremendous experiences politically on your own, and then working for Tammy. Senator Baldwin continues to impress people. You know, every place she goes in that, she is open to learning new things and representing people of all sorts. So I'm sure you and I both miss that, but you're going to be a fantastic candidate, and we really appreciate you taking time to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad to take some of the lessons learned from Senator Baldwin. All right. And yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys.
You bet. Darren Von Rudin of the Wisconsin Farmers Union is next. You're up north.
WI.com.
Welcome back to the cabin. This is the Up North Podcast. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with Kirk Banks, Ted, and Sarah Yacoub. It's time to visit with someone who doesn't just understand where the green grass grows, but what kind of leaders we need for rural America and for rural Wisconsin.
Our next guest, Darren Von Rudin, served as president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union from 2010 to February of 2022, and continues to serve as vice president and district director. Darren, thanks for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Darren, we talked a little bit yesterday, and I know that you have a wealth of information about what, you know, farmers in Wisconsin need from the federal government, from their politicians. So let's start with the farm economy. The pandemic showed us that when too many farms or processors are concentrated together, it means that when the supply chain breaks down, the economy isn't nimble enough to fill in the gaps. And what I saw as a restaurant owner back during COVID, food costs went through the roof. And you also look what happens when you get, you know, huge amounts of workers all in like meat processing plants. And when one gets COVID, the rest of them get COVID. And then all of a sudden you can't get your meat. Same thing goes for Monsanto, right? Like, you know, these guys, huge seed companies, have been kind of making the prices go a little higher and a little higher. And when there's, you know, and so not only does that weigh on inflation, now we got a war in Ukraine where we got, you know, the farms, a lot of the seed, a lot of the food comes from the Ukraine. So you've been preaching this for probably years. You know, we gotta deconcentrate the agriculture, deconcentrate processing plants. You're probably saying, I told you so. What, talk to me about what I just said. Am I right, or how do you see it?
Yeah, we've been talking about it for decades already, really, about, you know, trying to diversify the agricultural economy and the agricultural sector. And that means more farms, not fewer farms. And of course, just the opposite's been happening. In Wisconsin here, dairy is the number one ag industry. Back in the mid 80s, we had 44,000 dairy farms in the state of Wisconsin. Today, we're a little over 6,900 dairy farms. So, you know, less than a third of what we had 35 years ago. And looking at, you know, what the pandemic showed, and right now we're really dealing with another issue within the chicken and poultry industries in the upper Midwest with the avian influenza in many herds being euthanized because they've got the flu bug in those herds. So, you know, that's adding to that additional problem of inflation, because there isn't animals, there isn't eggs, And just the size of these farms, if we had 10 of those, 10 farms for every one of those big farms, maybe we would just have to get rid of 10% of the birds instead of all the birds within that farm. And certainly the concentration issue is something that we've been trying to address and bring to the forefront. Currently, the Biden administration is doing quite a bit on that front. They've asked the U.S. Attorney General to do things. Let's look at concentration issues. Let's break up some of these larger monopolies so that we actually have a diverse system of agriculture here in the U.S.
So, Darren, as I see it, there's sort of two levels to this. One, there's identifying the problem, and then two, doing something about it. And as we're getting better about talking about the problem, you know, what would you recommend that we can do about it, or what can be put in place, or what lessons can be learned so that we don't end up in this place again and dig us out of this mess?
Well, we certainly have to get the right people in our elected offices. That's a big thing. Back in the late 2008-2009 era, after the last financial crisis that we had, there was some meetings held throughout the country that did look at concentration. Then all of a sudden we had a different election, 2010. The Tea Party made a big stink and got folks in D.C. and the funding for some of these programs and the ideas disappeared. So now the DOJ had no funds to go out and actually enforce antitrust laws. And, you know, right now we're seeing another opportunity again. There is money within the CARES Act and some of the the transportation bills too that are out there. So, you know, the money is there this time. The question is, will we have enough time to actually make a difference?
Right. So we've got two ways of coming at this. We've talked about the monopolies, the near monopolies. To what degree can we go after that? Whether it's breaking up or just having, you know, better rules or just enforcing the rules that are there. Let's look at it from the other side, and that's incentivizing, you know, folks on the smaller side. We learned over the pandemic to appreciate that small, locally sourced supplies can still play a role if government would simply be more of an advocate for them as they are for the big boys. We saw a big uptick in small local meat processors when all the big meat packing plants went down. We know how popular farmers markets have become. So what are the things, as you see it, that can provide those incentives for homegrown and the rural parts of Wisconsin food production?
Yeah, certainly that incentivizing is something that has taken place, especially here in Wisconsin, Minnesota. In the meat industries, there's been a lot of dollars put towards building that infrastructure. And then also, you know, the education part of it, looking at our high schoolers and college graduates that don't really know what they want to do, but might want to get into some form of agriculture, and giving those opportunities through scholarships and then just remodeling dollars or incentives to make sure that these small, medium-sized plants can build up their capacity to actually meet the local demand. You know, a lot of farmers right now, we're booking out to get our animals harvested a year down the road. So looking at April of 2023 before we can even get an animal into a lot of local spots. So we definitely need more local processing, whether it's in meat or even dairy too. You know, we've gotten so concentrated that, you know, plants are doing one item or one specialty, and that's all they do. And so when we look at the pandemic, we had to dump milk because we simply couldn't get it put into the processing lines, which then in turn we ended up not having some dairy products on shelves throughout the state of Wisconsin, which just drives me nuts when we have so much of it available here.
All right, so Darren, let's switch gears a little bit. I know we talked a little bit yesterday just so I could kind of get smarter about agriculture in Wisconsin. And you said that a lot of the political stuff that you have to deal with comes at the federal level, not necessarily at the state level, even though I do want to ask you from a rural standpoint what you're looking for from the Democratic Party to help out. But let's stick to the federal level now. You know, Tammy Baldwin, we just talked to Kelly Westland, you know, a second ago, who worked for Tammy. You know, she's, I don't know, you know, Pat, what is she? She's a on the agriculture board. She brings home the money to Wisconsin because she's part of the agriculture stuff in Wisconsin, right?
She chairs the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee for Agriculture. She almost literally brings home the bacon.
So that's her role. And then you got a guy like Ron Johnson, who I think has voted against the agriculture bill every single time, you know, that it's been put up for a vote, because the agriculture bill is also related to SNAP money, which is, what's the acronym, Pat?
Supplemental Nutrition Appropriation.
Supplemental Nutritional Appropriation.
Yeah. So the thing that people sneer and call it food stamps, the thing that I grew up with, you know, being raised by a single mom. And of course, all that does is help give farmers more of a market when families can eat healthier, heaven forbid, Kirk.
Yeah, so Ron's voting against the ag bill, even though somehow Republicans are winning in among farmers, the votes among farmers. And then Tammy's bringing home the bacon, literally. Why is there this disconnect, you think, among farmers and among rural folks about what's going on at the federal level?
Well, certainly misinformation is one thing that's out there that's causing some issues, but just a lack of knowledge of what actually happens at the farm bill level and where that's at. And certainly Senator Johnson has not been in favor of it because he believes that we're spending way too much money on the nutrition title of the farm bill. The farm bill has 12 different chapters in it, so it's a pretty big bill overall, one of the biggest bills that they look at. It's only looked at every 5 years, so we'll be looking at it here in 2023 again, trying to make some corrections, additions to it. But certainly Senator Baldwin, in her position as the appropriations chair, has put money not only in Wisconsin, but throughout the country, because it isn't specific to one state where those dollars go, but helping small farms, trying to make sure that we can get dollars put available so that new farmers can come into the business too. And where Senator Johnson has voted no against it, even though back in 2012, as part of the farm bill debate back then, the USDA did a study and realized that of every dollar that's spent on the SNAP program or the nutrition title of the farm bill, 14 cents of that comes directly back to farmers. So his votes, and he's saying that it's not going to be good for anybody, so let's stop spending all those dollars. That's taken 14 cents of billions of dollars away from farmers directly.
And that's only some of the federal funds. We've been talking a lot about the agriculture end of it, but when you're helping the rural economy, that includes federal money to expand broadband. That's what you see in the bipartisan infrastructure bill, because when you say to a, you know, what you have to acknowledge, farmers also want good schools for their kids. You know, farmers also want, you know, they download movies too. Let's take this to the state level, because from a political standpoint, it's important to note what we call the farm vote is not the same as the rural vote. Rural Wisconsin has tons of small cities, fewer than 10,000 people in each one. And in those cities, they understand the importance of good schools, good infrastructure. And while they value their farm neighbors, they also want their water to stay clean. But unfortunately, for many years, Democratic parties, state and national, have all but ignored what I think are needles in the haystack. So in your view, Darren, what's the message that they should be sharing about what they offer versus the usual Republican emphasis, which often comes down to, you know, divisive culture war issues and other ways to, you know, kind of gin up fear or concern versus a, you know, literally meat and potatoes issues?
Well, I certainly think looking at the, you know, last couple of years of Governor Evers' term in office, you know, the pandemic has thrown a lot of wrenches in everything, but we've actually got some things done here in the state for agriculture. For instance, the dollars that are going to broadband now are 3 to 4 times more than what they ever were under the Walker administration. The current meat processing dollars is something that the governor and the department work for very hard to get in, and that's also been passed and is out there now. So, you know, we've got a Republican Party in the state of Wisconsin that continues to go to Madison and do very little or nothing at all. They're supposed to be employed full time as our elected officials, yet how much time have they actually spent in Madison doing the work of the people this year again? Three or four times in 2020, they actually went to Madison for 10 seconds, gavel in, gavel out, didn't do anything at all. As a farmer and most farmers across the state, we're workers, and we really want to see our elected officials be workers too and get the job done, not sit and bicker about little things and never get anything done. We need to continue to move the economy forward. And I think with some of the ambitions of the folks within the Democratic Party, we as rural residents need to start looking at the difference between the parties, a party that wants to work or a party that wants to just do nothing.
Absolutely. And, Dwight Eisenhower is one of the last really solid Republicans that it seems we had in this country as a leader. And forgive me if I'm misremembering this, but if I recall correctly, he actually commissioned a study and found that a good road brings so much benefit. So a good road within a mile of a farm makes all the difference in the world to that farmer and their ability to be economically prosperous. You know, what do you say to our listeners or to anyone who, continues to vote for a party that just isn't interested in putting in the work? And, a side note on what you were saying, my representative spends his time partying and doing business in Florida. So I hear you. I'm like, why are we paying you for a full-time job that you're just not interested in doing? Move aside for someone who wants to get to work. But how do we get that message across? Here you are as a hardworking farmer and, the Democrats are still getting misbranded, left and right.
Yeah, it all boils down to news sources. It's very frustrating with talking with fellow farmers that have one news source, and it really goes on both sides there too. It'd be nice if everybody would listen to three or four news sources like we used to, but now it's become concentrated. That word concentration again, we need to look at multiple sources, and certainly getting dollars back in rural communities is something that, the Democratic Party, and this goes all the way up to the Biden administration, looking at the infrastructure bill that they were able to work with both the House and the Senate on and get passed, and those dollars are out there now. Our local township is receiving $859,000 plus through one of those ARPA grants to redo a couple miles of a road that's heavily traveled in the springtime. We've got an Amish community here that has greenhouses and many different cottage industry type businesses on that road, and it's been in gravel for the last 3 years. So it's going to be nice to finally get that built up. But looking at, the infrastructure, you guys are dealing with the whole broadband issue tonight again. We have board members from up there that can't get on Zoom links. They have to participate by phone because they don't have good broadband access. This is something that should have been corrected 7-8 years ago already, not getting at it today.
Without a doubt. Darren Von Ruden from the Wisconsin Farmers Union, thanks so much for the visit. We appreciate hearing from you on all the issues tonight.
Thanks, Pat.
All right. We will be back to wrap up the show right after this.
Welcome back. As we do each week, we want to thank our hosts, Devil Radio 92.7 in the Madison area and in the Waukesha, Milwaukee area, WAUK 540 AM and The Shaw 101.1 FM. You can use their Devil Radio app to listen to our show on demand anytime. And you can find the video version on the Facebook page of the Minocqua Brewing Company.
And. We might have really big news to share about this further. This segment might get longer, all the people that we thank. So stand by for that. You can find my daily work over at UpNorthNewsWI.com or search UpNorthNewsWI on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also catch our new Up North News daily updates on these radio stations, 7:30 weekday mornings, 5:30 in the evenings. And as we've found out over the past few weeks here, 7:30 in the evenings as well, because, if you're listening to us live, you can't get enough Pat Kreitlow, apparently. You get it during the commercial breaks, too. Although, Kirk, we hear you on the commercial breaks, too. We have to get Sarah to start doing promos. It can't just be a sausage party here. We have to change that.
All right. So enough about promos. Let's talk about farms, because I grew up in Stevens Point, and there were cornfields everywhere around within a 10-mile radius. And it's been getting me all jazzed up to remember my days growing up. So I want everybody to tell their story about their favorite farm moment. And I've had many, but many are G-rated, and I told Pat many are R-rated. And I will not do the R-rated. I'll do a PG-rated version. But I think my first time that I thought I was in love, but really it was puppy love, was kissing a girl in a cornfield in high school, right close to Rochelle, like between Stevens Point and I just plowed my car right in the cornfield because you could do that, and I was a stupid kid. So I apologize to whatever farmer had to clean up that mess. But that was my favorite time on a farm or on a cornfield.
You seriously had to ruin somebody's crops to create your own parking spot?
I know. I'm still narcissistic to a certain degree, but when I was in high school, it was strong. It was strong.
Oh, God. Sarah, how about you?
So, okay, my 3-turning-4-year-old was once a 2-turning-3-year-old. We were on our friend's farm, and it was around the season when the cow manure gets really wet. So we round the corner, and all of a sudden I hear a panic cry of help. And there he is, knee deep in cow manure that has sort of a quicksand effect. And so I'm like, huh, all right. So I pull the kid out, and one boot is stuck. And from that point on, every time we go to a farm, whether it's our friend's farm or a different farm, he asks me if his boot's going to get stuck in the mud again, because he's got this memory ingrained of being stuck in the mud. And it was probably one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
So funny, you know, kids aren't going to have a weird definition of mud, you know?
Yeah.
Well, for this particular city kid, who wasn't entirely a city kid, because my dad's second marriage was to a dairy farm girl from Gilmanton in Buffalo County near Mondovi. And then, as it turns out, I started to date and eventually married and have stuck with, she has stuck with me for 35 plus years, a farmer's daughter from Manitowoc County. And we met in college at UW-Eau Claire. We, decided it was time to go visit each other's family. And you know, mine was relatively drama-free because, you know, what's a kid in the suburbs, you know, going to do? Then it came time for me to go visit her family out on the farm in Manitowoc County. And we arrived during evening milking. And at that point, she said, well, you may as well come right into the barn. So we did. And now they milked 72 cows, and she did, you know, twice a day before getting on the school bus and after getting off it. And so she walks me in there, and this is my first time meeting her dad, who's been a dairy farmer. You know, he's like a fourth, fifth generation dairy farmer himself. And I thought he welcomed me right into the family so nicely. He's like, would you like to help out? Sure, whatever you need. You're just putting on a milking machine. He's like, okay. He hands me the dip, and he goes, go take care of number 36. So I head over to stall number 36, and as I'm bending down, I see why he has started laughing his face off, because that was nothing in stall 36 that you could milk. at least and get away with it. So thankfully, that laugh stopped me from going any further. We should go on that note. Thank you, Kirk. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Darren Von Rooten and Kelly Westland. Thanks for joining us at the cabin. Come on back up north next week with no bull milking required.
Nice. Won't you let me die?